I'm going to talk about something today for a little bit that's personal to all of us. I hope it should be anyway. And that is personal inventory. Say, what in the world are you talking about? My car, my money, my nice jewels, or all my clothing? What are you talking about? No, I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about what is in your mind. What's in our minds? What's in our heart? And I doubt if I had ever heard that word before I moved to Arkansas, Thanksgiving Day, 1971. I may have, I don't remember. But we moved to Arkansas in order for me to put in a little business. Because I've always been of the attitude that if I was going to work for somebody, then they were going to make money off of me, off of my labor. And if they were going to make that money off me, then I could make it for myself. And having the lack of education that I have, I probably could have gotten maybe minimum wage. And I had a wife and by that time four little children. And I couldn't take care of them on minimum wage. So I put in a little business and I'm still doing that. Well, actually I'm not. I sold out to our son 2 years ago, I guess. And now I work harder than I did before I sold out to him. And I work for nothing, I might add. But being in business forced me to learn a lot of things. It forced me to learn, or it taught me to learn, it forced me to learn a lot of things about people, some that you probably wouldn't like to know about, but anyway, that's the way it is. But one of the things it taught me to learn was inventory. Inventory is a very, very important part of business. It tells the business where they are, where they have been, where they are headed. So they take inventory at least once a year to find out, to learn where they are. A lot of inventories will count every bolt, every screw, every washer, every little piece they have, they count it. And I think you'll see in a few minutes how this is going to play in with our lives, our mental state. But I've been in businesses when they would literally shut down for inventory, and they absolutely will not take anything in or ship anything out. I took a load of parts to a business one time, and this guy met me over there on the dock, and he said, "We're closed for inventory." And he would not accept the load of parts that I had taken in there to them. And I said, "I'll tell you what you can do. You can come get it then." I was being a little bit mean to him, but anyway, they wouldn't take the parts. They wouldn't accept the parts. It's that important to them. And the word inventory actually means a complete listing of merchandise or stock on hand, and like I said, it is done every year, at least once a year. And if you've ever been into a grocery store such as Walmart, when they are taking inventory and restocking their shelves, it's a job. It's a big job. It's a job that's tedious. It's a job that they work at. It's a job that's very important. Someone goes up and down the aisles. They check off each shelf. They see how much of an item they have on that shelf. And they make notes of that. If they need more than something, or if they need more of some item, then it's ordered, it's taken care of. If they don't need any more of that certain item, they know for now they've got enough. They're okay. They also know they have to check the supply again in a few days or pretty soon. They don't check it off their list and forget about it. They have to know. They have to know what their inventory is. or what's in their inventory. Taking inventory is a very constant process of helping the store be prepared. If they run out of something, it causes a lot of problems. And it really does cause a lot of problems. For instance, if you live in an area where there's snow and ice, a part of your lives, if that's the way it is, especially up north, way up north, even in Arkansas, we had a devastating ice storm a little over a year ago. Then when you hear that's coming in, what do? Jump up and run to the store to buy a bunch of necessities. And it is necessities. It's something that we have to do. Food, fuel, candles, probably maybe some gas, whatever you need to be prepared for this storm that's coming in. I have been in business here in Arkansas. It'll be 39 years this year, or this fall. When I was running a sandblasting business, Opal and I had to constantly watch and keep up with the things that I needed to do that with, such things as sand. I run a sandblasting business, run it for 25 years. Sand, fuel, gloves, hood lenses, spare parts, because when you're sandblasting something and that stuff showers right back in your face, well, of course, if you've got protection on, but it soon dulls your lens out to where you have to change it every little bit, sometimes two or three times an hour. So we had to keep up with all those things in order to keep it afloat. And if we had not done that, then our income would have suffered. And we could not afford that because we that was our living. It was our livelihood. Later on, when I put in that powder coating business, was the same thing. Only it was a lot more involved. We had to keep up with all of our inventory as far as the paint's concerned. And it has to be done. It has to be kept up with. You might not think, I never until this come along, but we have five basic colors of black. You'd think black's black, wouldn't you? That's not the case. We had five basic colors of black. Same thing applies with the other colors, and they have to be kept up with. There's even some colors now called Wayne's White, Wayne's Red, Wayne's Blue. It was formulated for our shop, and they named it Wayne's Blue, Wayne's White. And it has to be taken care of. If you let your inventory go down, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer. So we need to ask ourselves what is in our inventory mentally. We, as Christians, have a similar situation. We are required to take spiritual inventory. I want you to turn to 1 Corinthians 11:28. And I know this is about Passover. We all know that. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 28. And it simply says, but let a man, and that's not talking to gender. You ladies have the same responsibility that we have, a man has. Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of that cup. And this is read once a year, most of the time in Passover services or Passover time. But I think we need to do that every day. I think it needs to be done every day. In fact, I think we'll read these scriptures every week, because we need to be reminded of it. We're reminded of the Sabbath each week. It comes around every 7 days. So we're reminded. So it's not anything wrong with being reminded of it. Go to Galatians 6 and verse 4. Galatians 6 and verse 4. It says, but let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. Spiritual inventory is very, very important. I want to ask three basic questions. Question one is, what should we have in our spiritual inventory? Go back just to cross the page to Galatians 5, 19, 21. And I know you've all heard these scriptures over and over and over. But we'll just go down through here and break these down and look at them a little bit. We'll start in verse 19. And as we go over them, ask yourself, do I have these in my mind or my life or my inventory? It says, now the works of the flesh is evident, uncleanliness. Let me back up a little. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery. Do you know of any adultery around anywhere? Have you ever known of that? It's something that should not be in our lives. But we all know it is. We all know it's in our lives. But it's something that should not be there, and it's something we should ask ourselves about. Fornication. What would the world be like if there wasn't any fornication going on? What would it be like? Uncleanliness, lewdness, or shameless. I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the word uncleanliness means. I got some ideas, but I don't know exactly what it's referring to. Lewdness is shameless. Shameless. They're shameless. I mean, it's just the way of life. It's adultery and fornication. They're shameless about it. It's just prevalent. It's everywhere. Idolatry. Idolatry is something that I have thought about a lot. I've had it mentioned to me and brought up to me, because I'll tell you why. I don't think there's anything I'd rather do than take an old automobile, 50 years old, and restore it. Well, it requires a lot of work. It requires a lot of work. It requires quite a bit of money in some cases, depending on the automobile. But is the work like that? Is that idolatry? I've never bowed to one. I've never looked at it as something that might save my life or heal me. However, it does take me up the road most of the time. So I wonder about these things. And I've heard them say, well, your house could be an idol. Well, now we have a house. And I mow the yard, cut the bushes. And Opal keeps it immaculately clean inside. She makes me pull my shoes off before I come in.
I'm joking.
But she does. She keeps it very clean inside. Very well kept. And I do my best to keep it nice outside. But does that mean it's our idol? Now, we look at it for security. Of course we do. We sleep in it. We sleep in there at night. We lock the doors. But is it a god? It's my mind, no, it's not. Absolutely not. However, like I said, I've heard ministers say that it could be a god. It's not, as far as I'm concerned. Sorcery. What about that one? Is sorcery in our mind in any way? Hatred? Yeah, you see some of that around. Contentious. Jealousy. Jealousy is a bad, bad place to be. Jealousy is a bad thing to have in your life. I've known people have to go to psychiatrists because of jealousy. It's a bad thing to be. So we need to look and see if this is in our minds. How about outbursts of wrath? I've seen that too. I've seen that also. Outbursts of wrath. selfishness. Are we selfish? Are selfish selfish ambitions? Do we have selfish ambitions? Yeah, some of us do. Probably me included. Dissensions. No, there's no dissension around, is there? Heresies. Envy. Murder. Drunkenness. Revelries. And the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in times past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So you see, it's very important, brethren, that we have these things rooted out of our inventory in our minds. And you know, I or we or anyone else, a minister, anyone can stand up here and talk and preach till he's blue in the face. And if we, me included, don't do something about it, it's not worth anything. It's not worth anything. We're just blowing so much hot air. Now let's look at the fruits of the Spirit. Verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love. Now what is love? I've heard that question asked over and over and over many times. What is love? Go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Chapter 13 and verse 1. And you notice love is at the top of the list there. First one is love. I use this very bunch of scriptures right here yesterday evening in that wedding ceremony. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but if I have not love, I become sounding brass or a clinging cymbal, which is not worth anything. If we don't have love. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. We need to ask ourselves, is this in our mental inventory? And though I bestow all my goods and feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Now here comes what love really is. Love suffers long. Love suffers long. Are we suffering long? Is that what we do? Or do we throw in the towel pretty quick? Love is kind. Are we kind? Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself all puffed up. And look at me. Look at mine. Look at my job. Look at my business. Look at my kids. They're just absolutely top of the line. I know what to say. I know when to say it. Just all puffed up and proud of himself. This says, love is, it is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Do we behave rudely? Now, it don't say that's just in church. It just says don't behave rudely. That I think that means anywhere, any place. Don't behave that way. Does not seek its own way. Do we always want our own way about everything? I've seen that in people too. It is not provoked and thinks no evil. I think we've got our hands full to do these things and be this way. In fact, I don't think we can do it at all without the Spirit of God. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth. If you see somebody that's having a problem, we rejoice about it because they got the problem. I hope not. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. That's what we should have in our mental inventory. We need to ask ourselves, is my life adequately stocked in order to live each day according to what God asks of us? We need to ask ourselves these questions. Are we using the gift that has been given to the best of our ability? Do you know what that gift is? The Spirit of God. We had three people baptized last Sabbath. When I laid my hands on their heads and asked God to impart His Spirit in them, He did. Just like I think all of you have. There may be some not baptized, but if not, you should be, I guess. But anyway, that's what I'm talking about. That's the help that we have. And I ask, are we using it to the best of our ability, to the best we can? Or am I running low and need to take inventory so that I can restock? Remember the 10 virgins? 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. 5 run out of fuel, didn't they? 5 run out of the Spirit of God, or that's the connotation of it. So they went out and tried to borrow some from the others. They said, no, we ain't got enough for ourselves. I hope and pray that I won't be one of them that run out. We need to check our inventory on a regular basis. Point number 2. What causes our stock of these things that we just read about to run low? What causes it? I'm going to give you some things to think about that can certainly cause it. One is finances. Relationship. Unresolved issues. Jobs. Divorce. Illness. How about stress? I think stress is one of the worst. Stress has a way of causing us to lose focus, our strength, our character, and most importantly, our faith. Stress has a way of really, really tearing a person up. When each of us face the difficulties, hardships in our lives, it only stands to reason that we can lose the will to face another day. I've seen that happen. Seen it happen to a good friend of mine right up there in Northwest Arkansas right now. He finally went on disability because of it. I don't know if he'll ever get over it or not. I hope he does. He probably won't if he don't recognize it. And I don't know if he will or not. You might ask, why me? Why me, Lord? I'm sick. I'm really sick. Something we need to remember about that. God created us to get sick and to die. I don't want to die, but that's the way we are. So if you get down to that point, we don't need to start asking, why me? That's just the way it is. We might wonder, why does it seem that way? Why are we that way? We're bombarded with all kinds of problems and situations, or bad situations, every day. One after another. We are not exempt. Just because we're in the church, we are not exempt from trials. We do have a way to help us out of it, and we need to take full advantage of that way, because that's what we've been called to do. Number 3, how do we restock our inventory? This is not a difficult question to answer. It can be difficult to do. It can be difficult to restock ourselves, because once you get down, then it's hard to get back up. The answer is obvious: through prayer, fasting, Bible study, and fellowship. Fellowship is a very important part of being encouraged and helped and uplifted in this, along this way. We can't afford to let down. Take time to pray and reflect and meditate. I think in my case, I think meditation is probably one of the very best tools that we have available to us in overcoming some of these things, is meditation, because it allows us to sit there and think in our own little world, and it allows the Spirit of God to flow through us or come to us. Seek wisdom from your time of prayer, meditation, and study. We all have hectic lives, and I know we do. We all do. You look at somebody and you think, well, he's got it made. Until you've walked in his shoes a little bit, you don't know. You just don't know. We all need to simplify and reinforce on what is important. Putting God first helps to do just that. I'm going to tell you a story about a man that I met. And he was a professor at one of the major universities in Arkansas. I was associated with him about 4 years, and he and I became pretty good friends over that period of time. And he told me, there is no God. I don't know how he felt about that down in his mind and his heart, but that's what he said. He said, there's no God. He said, this Bible is just a book of myths and trial and error of people. It's all it is. Now keep in mind, here's a man that's a professor at a university in Arkansas, a major university. And I liked the man. I really did. He was a good man. But yet, if this man would have looked into this book, right here, and applied a little bit of what it said, whether it's a myth or whether it's has been compiled from other trial and error, whatever it is, if he would have looked into this and just applied a little bit of it, then he would not have been involved in a adulterous situation, left his wife. Then he married another lady who had been divorced and divorced her. If he would have just applied this a little bit, this book of myths, he probably wouldn't have been in all that trouble, all that gut-wrenching heartbreak that he was in. The last time I saw him get out of a car on Walmart parking lot, and he had on a suit, and it looked like he had probably slept in that suit. So here he is, like I said, a professor at a university, I don't want to identify him, teaching our future leaders, and he's teaching them that. Like I said, if he would have just applied a little bit of this, he wouldn't have been in that predicament. So, like I said, remember, here's a smart man, but yet he don't know how to live. We've got it all in front of us, and some of us don't follow it. And I don't always follow it either. It's hard to do. If our government would only obey just two or three of these simple rules, it's not simple, but if they would only obey a few of them, you know, it wouldn't be very long until the jails would be empty. Because crime would stop. There wouldn't be any murders, thieves, or whatever they go to jail for. There wouldn't be any more locksmiths and locks because they would go out of business. They wouldn't have any business. We wouldn't have any need for a lock. We wouldn't have any business with them. They'd be junk, be worthless. And so the list goes on and on and on. If they would just apply a little bit of this book of myths, this book of trial and error, they could learn a lot. It wouldn't be very long until disease, many, many of the diseases that we suffer and know about, would go away. But I don't think they're going to do that. So take the inventory of what is now in your mind and hearts. Work on it. Live on it. Live by it. It is very important, and it means whether we live or die.